to order, and we have a public hearing on 3414 and 3415, and because the numbers are close together, we're going to do them together.
Do you have a few comments?
Sure, Mr. Chair, I'd be glad to give a brief overview. House Bill 3414 requires the Department of Transportation to report to the Interim Legislative Committee regarding funding options for highway projects of statewide significance. 3415 requires a bond proceeds earmarked for replacement or repair of bridges but not spent by the Department of Transportation to instead be spent on highway projects of statewide significance. That measure, House Bill 3415, has a subsequent approval of the Committee on Ways and Means. 3414 does not and has a minimal fiscal impact.
Thank you, Patrick. Representative Fong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and for the record, State Representative Dave Hunt from Clackamas County. And I still feel like, Mr. Chair, this is an opportunity for you to come to this side of the table, but, you know, we'll have a mutual bill admiration society here. Because this, as Chair Gilman and members of the committee, as you can recognize, Chair Gilman and I and several of you have brought this bill forward to really focus on a critical issue that both these bills focus on, which are Oregon's projects of statewide significance. As we'll all remember, in 2003, the legislature passed a bill, the OTF 3 bill, which is really focused on enhancing freight mobility throughout our state. The centerpiece, the biggest piece of that legislation, was $1.3 billion focused on the replacement and repair of bridges on state highways in Oregon. We've also become aware within the last 2 years that an OSU study has indicated that a lot of those projects can be done for far less expense, which is really good news. It creates a surplus of funds, therefore, within the OTF3 package. Funds that have already been set aside, fees that are already there to fund them. And it is true that today we don't know exactly what that amount of money that will be saved will be. It will be a significant number. It will be a six-figure number. Whether that's $100 million, $300 million, $500 million, I'm not sure anyone really has a clear sense at this point, which is why this legislation doesn't list a specific number. It says very clearly that once the bridge projects that we're committed to through OTF3 have been constructed, have been completed, that the bridges that need to be replaced have been replaced, the bridges that need to be repaired have been repaired off that original list of 365 bridges, that once that is complete, the balance of the funds of remaining within that $1.3 billion account will go to projects of statewide significance. And much like we're not trying to rewrite the bridge list that was available when we approved OTF3, we're also not trying to rewrite the projects of statewide significance. That's a list that the commission has come up with already of projects across Oregon that are really critical to moving people and especially freight, adding capacity to our system in a way that is really critically needed, both with the advent of more people in Oregon and certainly with the advent of more freight. These projects of statewide significance, these six projects across our state, which we'll hear more about later today, are going to improve freight and passenger mobility. The problem is they cannot be funded. There's not a funding mechanism identified for them. The Transportation Commission did an excellent job in searching out for and identifying these critical projects, but in one case identifying funding for them, but for the remaining projects, there is not any kind of significant funding available for them. If we don't take advantage of this opportunity to focus these leftover dollars from OTF3 on these projects of statewide significance, it'll be a real missed opportunity, and it's not clear to me where else we would come up, at least in the short term, with any other funding capacity to be able to get these projects actually built. This, I think if you look at both 3415, which would set aside the additional OTF3 dollars, and 3414, which would ask ODOT to come back to us next session and in the interim with a list of additional funding options to fund the rest of those projects, because even if $500 million is left from OTF3, that will still not fund all the projects of statewide significance. It'll make a huge step forward in funding them, but they won't be done. So the second bill, 3414, will still be needed. But But they are completely consistent with the original goals of OTA 3 in terms of freight mobility, in terms of getting good construction and other jobs created in the short term, and strengthening our state's freight mobility in the long term. A few things that these bills do not do. I've talked about what they try to accomplish. They do not, as you can see in those bullets on the bottom of your page, raise any fees, taxes, or additional revenues other than those already adopted in the 2003 OTA 3 package. As I mentioned, they don't compromise the original intent of OTA 3. They're really very consistent with that intent in terms of freight mobility. They also do not reduce the number of bridges. That 365 bridges that were identified, that we all said to our state, we will get these bridges fixed and available for moving freight. It will not reduce that number at all, and it won't change the corridor approach that ODOT and the Commission have already adopted to repairing these bridges. And it will also not get into us trying to identify any specific projects within statute. We're saying the Commission has already done the work of adopting projects of statewide significance. They've already gone through a process, so I'm not going to say, or you're not going to say, we're going to try and add on project 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. We're going to focus on the needs that have already been identified out there. And so that's why Chair Gilman and I and others have brought this forward. It's a real opportunity to get something done, again, both in terms of the short-term construction jobs that are needed, as well as the long-term freight mobility benefits that are so critically needed. Local communities across our state have done so much of the work, and we really can't afford to wait two more years to step up and do ours.
Thank you, Rep. St. Hunt. Questions? Senator Starr. And if you'll excuse me, I'm going to run over to Ways and Means for a little while.
No problem. Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity to testify today. Mr. Vice Chair, are we currently in public hearing on both bills?
Yes.
Very good. Excellent. For the record, I'm State Senator Bruce Starr, representing Senate District 15, the communities of Hillsborough, North Plains, Cornelius, and Forest Grove. I am here to testify on these two bills. They're dealing with the same thing and really an opportunity to look back at the success that we had last session. My message today is that I want to compliment the Oregon Department of Transportation and their work as they proceeded with OTA 3 specifically. As most everybody on this committee knows, the process by which those projects were selected and also the process by which they determined whether these bridges that had been identified as key backbone in our freight, movement of freight in this state, the process by which they determined whether these bridges really needed to be replaced, repaired, or even maybe they just had the kind of life that they could be crossed off the list. And I'm talking about the OSU study, particularly, specifically. And then also the idea that we will be able to get the same amount of work done for less money and save the taxpayers some money, and then we have a decision to make. What do we do, quote, with the extra money? And I want to acknowledge Director Bruce Warner. And every time that he's sat in front of, or in a chair like this, in front of a committee that I've been on, has reiterated the fact that he and the department will come back to the legislature at the appropriate time and have a discussion about how it is that we're going to spend this extra money. And I think that Director Warner has been consistent in that message to us. And these bills clearly would direct the department about how to spend those resources. I'm not opposed to the bills. I think that projects of statewide significance are key, important projects in our state. As Representative Hunt had mentioned, and I think you're going to hear additional testimony from others that as I scanned the room when I walked in, they're certainly proponents of those projects, and I wouldn't expect anything other than folks to come to the table and say, here's a source that we can use to fund these projects. The one thing that I'm particularly interested in is the opportunity to leverage additional resources, leverage additional dollars. And as I look at the projects of statewide significance, most likely, I can't say it in every case, but in most cases, I think that those projects will likely be built through another bill, another option that the legislature created last session, the Oregon Innovative Partnerships Program, which really is the opportunity for the private sector to walk in the door and help us identify those other funding sources, whether they're tolls or other innovative financing mechanisms. And currently the legislature, through the budget process last session, allocated $20 million in the Oregon Innovative Partnerships Program to assist and help move those projects forward. And I don't know, I'm guessing that this committee has had a hearing on that program, probably from Jim Witte. And so you have a sense of how that process is moving forward with requests for proposals hitting the streets and a significant amount of interest from the private sector. If I were to contemplate a tweak to the language in this bill or these two bills, I would probably include that as a place to put some of this, quote, extra money, just because the opportunity to leverage that private sector investment and, I think, interest around the world, really. So with that, I think that I appreciate Representative Hunt, Chair Gilman, and others that have sponsored this legislation. I think it's a healthy discussion and debate. I think it's one that we ought to have, whether we have it this session or we have it down the road when there's more definition on what kind of savings there may or may not be. And I think all of us are interested in continuing the conversation with Director Warner, who's in, you know, again, in my experience, been very forthright about having that conversation with us. So with that, I appreciate the opportunity to testify this afternoon and to answer any questions if there were any.
Yes, Senator. Any questions, Senator?
I do. Thank you. I just wanted you to maybe explain a little bit what your suggestion to the tweaking of the language. I was trying to understand what you meant by include language to.
Well, yeah, we have, and in some respects, the language that's in the bill now may cover it, because the projects of statewide significance most likely will be built through the Innovative Partnerships Program. But just to ensure, to make sure that those dollars would be spent through that program, we could call it out in the bill and amend the bill to specifically say a portion of, you know, wouldn't have to be, again, we really don't know how much money there is. So it's not like you can say, let's put $50 million in the OPA program and $50 million in, you know, in statewide projects of statewide significance. We just don't know. But if, you know, if I could contemplate a way to improve this bill, that would be one direction that I may go. Though, again, most likely, more than likely, all of those projects, except I think Pioneer Mountain Eddyville, I think it's going to get funded already, and it's on its way, and that's one of the projects with statewide significance. Hopefully, if we get a federal reauthorization bill passed, and they're on the verge of debating that bill in the United States Senate this week, so that's encouraging. Anything else?
Representative Byer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know that you can answer this. I guess maybe it's one of those hypothetical questions. But can you think of any advantage, since we don't know what kind of money might be out there, we don't know what the circumstances are going to be, would there be any advantage in your mind to doing this now as opposed to further down the road? I mean, leveraging money or anything else?
Well, I think that, for one, it would provide hope for some of the folks that are in the room behind me, that there's a source of funding for some of those projects. You know, again, it's a little bit of a problem because we don't know the amount of dollars that are going to be there. And I think Director Warner is likely going to testify, and he may give more specificity about when we may know more. You know, is it possible that we'll know something between now and before we meet again in January in 2007? Maybe if there is, then it maybe makes sense to move this ahead now rather than wait until next session. Again, you take the issue off the table, more or less, if you deal with it now, and just say, hey, 50% is going to go here and 50% is going to go there, and then the numbers come in. And again, we will be back here, and we could always amend what we've done if that were the case. So I'm really not advocating moving it now as opposed to waiting, though I would advocate maybe just a little bit different approach. It's not that different, but a little slight change.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Senator. Dick Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for introducing House Bill 3414 and having this hearing today. This bill will move forward serious discussion of how to finance projects of statewide significance. This discussion is long overdue and wanted by many in our state. It's easy for a project to go from a great idea to a plan, but without the availability of significant funding, all ends. Citizens around the state really do not understand why we plan and plan but never go to construction. The North Clackamas County Chamber of Commerce looks forward to working with ODOT and others in identifying and reviewing funding options for major highway projects. For the past 3 years, our chamber has identified the Sunrise Corridor as our top priority highway project. We have recognized the importance of the Sunrise Corridor both to our region and as a significant statewide project. Mr. Vice Chair and committee members, on behalf of the North Clackamas Chamber of Commerce, thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. First question, would you please, for the record, state your name?
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Dick Jones.
Thank you.
And I'm a board member of the chamber, and I chair the Land Use and Transportation Committee.
Thank you, sir. Any questions?
I also have some comments on 3415, which I believe was given to you as well. Mr. Vice Chair, thank you for introducing House Bill 3415 and having this hearing today. Your efforts in identifying a possible revenue source to begin financing projects of statewide significance is appreciated by many who have struggled to move projects along. The North Clackamas Chamber has been a long-standing supporter of transportation investment. We know these investments make a huge impact to both both our local and the state's economy. When the remaining dollars from upgrading bridges is put into the economy, jobs will be created. The taxes these workers pay will provide funding for services, including schools and seniors across this state. The North Clackamas County Chamber of Commerce has seen the challenge of funding the Sunrise Corridor, a critical project in growing the economy in our area. We know no one source brings the total needed funds, but by working together and with different funding sources, they can be woven together to get the project completed. The Chamber supports completing the financing so construction can begin on the Sunrise Corridor, not only to alleviate congestion in the Highway 212-224 corridor, but at its intersection with I-205. It should be noted, each day, 58,000 vehicles, including 7,000 trucks, pass through that intersection. Improvements of the transportation infrastructure is a must to keep our current businesses and to attract new businesses into the Clackamas industrial area. In addition, the Sunrise Corridor will allow the needed access to allow development in the newly created city of Damascus. And we do have the mayor with us from Damascus today. Mr. Chairman and committee members, on behalf of the North Clackamas Chamber of Commerce, thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dick. Any questions? No?
Thank you.
Thank you. Jim Bernard.
Thank you. I'm Jim Bernard. I'm the mayor of Milwaukee, and I currently serve as treasurer and vice chair of the North Clackamas Chamber of Commerce. And I'm not going to repeat all the things Dick just told you, but I'd like to thank you for hearing this bill. And the city of Milwaukee is very much in support of the Sunrise Corridor, as is the chamber, because the Sunrise, in fact, will connect to our highway that goes through our town, 224, which is constantly getting more and more congested. Actually, we'd like to move that or bury that, but I doubt that the money's going to be available. So, Mr. Chair and the council, I appreciate you hearing both Bill 3414 and 3415, and thank you very much. Any questions? I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Jim. Questions?
Good. Thank you.
And Kevin from Clackamas County. Kevin, I can't read your last name.
Sorry.
You're
going to
tell
Davies?
Us.
Yeah.
Oh.
Good afternoon, Chairman Gillen and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Kevin Davies, and I'm testifying on behalf of the Clackamas County Economic Development on both House Bill 3414 and 3415. I'm also going to speak for Michael Wells, that he was unavailable, and we apologize that he was not available to come today. First thing I wanted to do was talk about the importance of the Sunrise Corridor for Clackamas County, and also thank you for the passage of the two bills in the previous legislature for funding the Sunnyside Road improvements and the county bridges and other various projects. We appreciate that help for our county. But we also want to put out that there's a need for other projects of statewide significance. And we feel like Sunrise Corridor is critical because it provides a bridge between the Portland area and the urban development and eastern Oregon, and it would combine the state. And the EDC would like to also be a partner with ODOT in working to take these funds, if they become available, and use them for the resources to be able to provide that. And as they said before, to provide hope, I think that is an important aspect of this, because as the Economic Development Commission, we're working towards providing jobs and opportunities for employment in our county and to reduce transportation issues. The EDC strongly supports a creative approach like 3415 and taking funds from one area that has been successful and applying them to a new opportunity. It's just one of the eight projects of highway of significance, of statewide significance, and so we feel like the Sunrise Corridor would like to be that on the top of the list because of the impact that it will have on the city of Damascus and also transferring goods and services between those parts of our state. In 2002, Metro approved 12,000 acres of lands in Clackamas County to expand the urban growth boundary, and that land will be better put to use with a Sunrise Corridor that would improve the transportation of the commercial and residential systems. It would also allow us to retain the existing businesses when they have difficulty getting their products and services between locations are going to move to a place where that's more convenient for them. And then we'd also like that to be available to attract new businesses to our area so that we can stimulate job growth. In the city of Damascus alone, we expect there to be 50,000 new jobs and 60,000 new residences and 24,000 family wage jobs. And we feel like that's important for Clackamas County and the state as a whole. So So I thank you for the opportunity to present to you. And do you have any questions?
Questions? No. Kevin, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Art Schloss.
Yes.
Oh, okay. He's off. Phil Kenemer. Welcome, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bill Kenemer, for the record, Clackamas County. Brought a couple of my experts with me. I think most of you know B.J. Smith with our government relations and CAM, Director of Department of Transportation and Development, Cam Gilmore. We appreciate you having this hearing. We appreciate your leadership on a very important issue for Clackamas County. And you see we're here with bells and whistles. But also for our state, because lacking in the legislative agenda this year is a good discussion about what we're going to do about needed highways. And highways of statewide significance, I think, makes for a very important discussion, and we appreciate your leadership on this issue. I think it's a critical discussion to have. One of the things that I've found as a county commissioner is that it takes time to create momentum for these kinds of major projects. And just as an example, and I know our sister counties and are working on these, we've been looking at local match, and we've been actually buying right-of-way already, because getting started early on these projects saves an enormous amount, both in timeline later on as well as the cost of inflation. So we see some opportunities here. We're working hard. Our particular project's called the Sunrise Corridor. It's critical to what the Portland region is doing in managing its growth. And you're going to hear, I believe, next the mayor of the newest city in the state of Oregon, Damascus. And Mayor Westcott, I think, is going to tell you about the fact that we're going to have a major city in an area that currently has 12,000 people scattered about in a very semi-rural kind of place. And soon this is going to be a major city, probably about the equivalent of Hillsboro. To do that, you're going to have infrastructure. We also have the reality that we need access. Currently, Highway 212 is already over capacity. And how are we going to resolve that when we're going to add a city the size of Hillsboro, and we have all the traffic already that needs to get out to Mount Hood and over to Eastern Oregon, both freight and recreation traffic? This is something that affects the region. In fact, it affects the entire state. We think the projects of statewide significance are very important. We appreciate ODOT's leadership in creating this list. We're glad and excited to be a part of that list. We're here to lend our support, and we'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you.
Questions?
Can we?
Yes, Representative.
Yeah.
I'd be interested, Commissioner Kenemer, if you could talk about the difference between allocating some funding this year versus the 2007 session. I mean, talk either generally about the projects of statewide significance or specifically the Sunrise. What kind of difference does that make in terms of the progress of the project?
Well, you know, I'm not sure Cam may be able to answer that better than me, but let me take a couple stabs at it. One of the things that we're looking at is the sooner you get going on projects, the more money you save. So we're buying right-of-way, as an example. Well, I don't know exactly about your area, but currently property's inflating in Clackamas County at 16.7% was the number I heard last week per year. It feels per month, frankly. And, you know, when you've got prime land coming on, people are starting to speculate like crazy out in Damascus and all the surrounding areas. Are you going to save a lot of money in anticipating it? We also know that wages are going up. Inflation, well, energy costs are driving it at the moment, but there are a lot of other pieces that are driving inflation in that 2 to 4% range. Well, you add 2 to 4%, unit one is about $225 million. You want to figure what 4% a year compounded does to your costs. It's pretty direct. Cam, can you add anything on that?
Cam Gilmore, Director of Clackamas County Department of Transportation and Development. Just a couple of things, I think. As you know, Representative Hunt, I think we have about $23 million committed to the project already, and thank goodness that's allowing, in cooperation with ODOT, to make progress on a supplemental draft environmental impact statement and also acquiring right-of-way in advance of development. Securing the money sooner than later, whether it's, you know, now or 07, really what that's about is ensuring that the project has the funding when it's needed. The project schedule currently calls for the project going to construction, that's Unit 1 between Interstate 205 and the Rock Creek Junction, in 2008, early 2009. So the more you can achieve that schedule, the less you pay in inflated costs, and probably more importantly, the closer you get to serving the new growth area in Damascus, and as importantly, the Clackamas Industrial Area, which is our crown jewel prime employment spot that is subjected to a lot of congestion today because of the condition of the highway.
Yes, Representative Byer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as a follow-up on his question, what, I mean, I can appreciate everything you've said so far about today versus next session, but if you don't know what that amount of money is going to be, how would you deal with that and how would it advantage you?
Well, I think it advantages us in a couple of ways. One is statewide. Anytime you start putting money in the pot, it primes the pump. Last time you helped get out Senate Bill 772, talked about partnerships. We're going to need money to leverage anything that can happen there. Anytime you put money in the project, that's part of why we put our money from an urban renewal district in the industrial area on it. It gets people excited, and people start realizing it can happen, and people like success. The other thing I think that's important is that probably the thing that bothers Oregonians the most about growth is congestion, and this is the solution. And we also know that the number one factor in economic development in virtually every study is transportation. And if you can't get there from wherever you are, then you're not going to get there in terms of economic development. So I think all of those things come together and you create synergy. When you've got Damascus coming online, when you've got tremendous growth occurring throughout the metropolitan region, when you have the Oregon economy beginning to stagger back to life, you want to feed that because it's going to grow. That gets to your question, Representative Byer? Thank you. I appreciate your asking.
If I could add just a tiny bit, Representative, Chair. Three projects are in the Portland area that have been around since 1987, I-599 Connector, Newburgh-Dundee Bypass, and the Sunrise Corridor. So we're now in about our 18th year of varying stages of development. So I would put it just kind of quantitatively. The sooner this is acted on with money or intent to provide money, the sooner the projects will go to construction. For example, if, hypothetically, there were to be some nine-figure sum available to projects statewide that were originally ranked by ODOT as significantly enough to, you know, look at seriously 2 years ago, we could be 2 to 3 years ahead getting those funded, not only saving the inflationary cost, but also getting the area served better sooner.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
Thank you very much for your time and your consideration and your leadership on this issue. Thank you.
D. Westcott.
Hi, I'm Dee Westcott. I'm the mayor of Damascus. I have some very brief written testimony that I submitted in favor of this, but I would like to digress a little and talk a little bit more about the Sunrise Corridor and Damascus and what's going on. I actually, the first time, got involved with the Sunrise Corridor back about 1988 when I was on the Citizens Advisory Committee for the Sunrise Corridor, which at that time was under Access Oregon and was deemed of statewide significance. It obviously didn't get funded and didn't go ahead. And in that interim period, Damascus has gone from a place that was largely rural into where it was exception lands and parcelized because of the formation of the water district and so forth, to where now it's going to be a significant user of that corridor But again, land is appreciating so tremendously there. It was a one-acre parcel sold at the intersection of Foster Road and 212 the other day for $800,000. Just to give you an idea of what it's accelerated, it was probably $200,000 a year ago. Now that we're inside the urban growth boundary, it's four times that price. And that's what we're going to run into on acquiring right-of-way and so forth. Damascus has a certified population now of just under 10,000. We're looking at 90,000 to build out. That's over a 20-year period. We're tasked with creating a city to take in the next 20 years of growth in the Portland area. So, of course, that's of great significance to me, and I understand that there are other areas in the state that could possibly have a compelling reason to use these funds too, but I would still think that 3415 would be the place to have the money preserved for use, and it's still under the legislature's jurisdiction to do that. I wish to thank you guys for allowing me to do this testimony, and if you have any questions.
Thanks, Steve.
Questions?
No?
Thank you.
Bob Russell.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Russell. I'm president of the Oregon Trucking Associations. And first, I'd like to say that the reason that we're here is a tribute to the management of the Department of Transportation and the leadership of Bruce Warner. My industry is very pleased that we didn't just take the list of bridges and run off and build them, that we investigated through the OSU report and discovered which ones needed to be built, which ones needed to be repaired, and we're making the appropriate adjustments. So that is a very good thing, and we're very pleased about that. I just passed out some project lists to you. The first one is the projects of statewide significance that went into the 0407 STIP. And you can see the projects that are listed there. We've talked a little bit about the Sunrise Corridor. I think there's some people in the room that are going to talk to you about the Newburgh-Dundee Bypass. There's a number of projects here, all that are very good for freight. These will help improve freight mobility in our state. However, there's also attached another list, and that's the developmental STIP for the 0407 STIP, and that has a number of other projects on it, and it also has some duplications. You'll see some of the projects that are on the list of statewide significance, you'll find them on the developmental STIP also as they move through the process, as they start the environmental process, do the preliminary engineering, right-of-way acquisition, and those kinds of things. Although I would be remiss if I didn't point out to you one project on the developmental STIP. It's on the second page. It's the next to the last one. And it has to do with Highway 140 in southern Oregon. That particular road goes from Medford all the way to Winnemucca, Nevada. And from the trucking industry's point of view, that is the most significant freight mobility project in the state of Oregon. And the reason that I say that is that cuts off 110 miles from a trip from Medford to Salt Lake City. So what that really does is it opens up southern Oregon from south of Eugene down to markets to the east. If you look at a map, if you open up 140, then the distance from Portland on I-84 to Salt Lake and the distance from Medford to Salt Lake becomes the same. So it makes southern Oregon very competitive with northern Oregon for eastbound traffic. So that is an extremely important project to the trucking industry. There are other projects that aren't on any of those lists. For example, there's the connection between I-84 and I-5 in Portland, that whole section of I-5 between the Fremont and the Markham bridges. That's not on any list today. That is one of the most congested intersections in this country. It is a huge impediment to freight and mobility in general. And yet that particular project doesn't appear on any list today. You know, we're talking about different ways that we could spend this money. There is another option that won't be very popular in this room, and that would be to give it back to the taxpayers. And it's something that we might want to consider. However, right now, we don't really know what we're talking about. We don't know how much money we expect to save. There's also another unknown, as Senator Starr mentioned. Congress is in the process of doing the highway reauthorization bill. There's some anticipation that there may be quite a bit more money in the next reauthorization bill for Oregon, and there certainly will be some earmarks that may fund some of these projects. So lacking that specificity, something that you may want to consider is that you amend this bill to say that we wait until 2007 to have this discussion, because I think you're going to hear from the department that they can't tell us today with any specificity how much money we're actually going to save. There's a lot of unknowns. They're still evaluating a number of the bridges. There's escalating steel prices that I know will have an effect on the bridges. There's lots of different things. In a couple of years, I think we'll have a much better understanding of what we've got to deal with, and then perhaps we can better allocate those resources among these various projects that folks would like to build. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thanks, Bob. Questions?
Yes, sir.
Sure. In light of the huge infrastructure needs in the state, do you see any possible advantage at looking seriously at basically paying down the bonds early and just not as opposed to using the money to actually build projects? Do you see any advantage to just paying down those bonds early?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hunt, I thought it worth throwing that on the table. Certainly there is a lot of unmet needs, but we don't really know how much we're talking about. And I would certainly like to have that discussion and have it be an informed discussion of, should we return it to the users? Should we spend it over here? Should we spend it over there? Once we really know how much money is available.
Further questions? Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
Leslie Lewis.
Good afternoon. Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm Leslie Lewis. I'm one of the three Yamhill County commissioners, and we have an interesting little project in our county, hopefully someday, called the Newburgh-Dundee Bypass. Its, I guess, official name is the Newburgh-Dundee Transportation Improvement Project. First, I want to, before I address House Bill 3414 and 3415, I want to thank the legislature for your efforts on OTIA 1, OTIA 2, OTIA 3, and, of course, for Senate Bill 772, the Oregon Innovative Partnership Program. I think all of those efforts have helped not only counties. My county is certainly benefiting from the bridge money, but they have helped move various modernization programs forward here in the state of Oregon, including the Newburgh-Dundee Bypass. I also want to thank the Oregon Transportation Commission and the Oregon Department of Transportation and Director Warner for the work that they have done on our project to date, for putting our project on the list of projects of statewide significance, and for naming us as one of the three projects to move forward into the request for proposal stage for the Oregon Innovative Public-Private Partnership. However, having said all of that, I think that there is a need for at least House Bill 3415, and again, we could debate whether or not now is the time for House Bill 14 is the one definitely there's a need for, and we could, you know, we could have debate about whether or not now is the time for 3415, but I believe that all of the projects that have been named as those of statewide significance delay is hurting each of those projects. Let me talk a little bit about the Newburgh-Dundee project. You've heard a lot about the Sunrise Corridor today. First of all, this is a regional problem. It's not a problem that is just a problem for Newburgh, just a problem for Dundee. We have 40,000 cars a day in Newburgh. That number is going to rise to near 60,000 cars a day in less than 20 years now. In Dundee, that ends up being 32,000 cars a day. Some of the cars stay in Newburgh, but most of them are on their way through. 32,000 cars a day in Dundee on two travel lanes. In fact, in your brochure, you'll see a picture of Dundee, the travel lanes, and this poor little car in the middle waiting to make the left turn. That's about the amount of traffic that is on I-5 between Albany and Eugene. So two lanes in Dundee is trying to accommodate the amount of traffic that is on the I-5 freeway system, on a four-lane freeway. In terms of freight mobility, we have a very historic downtown in Newburgh. It's one of the oldest areas in the state of Oregon. Beautiful old buildings. Trying to have a viable commercial downtown, and we have one freight truck every 20 seconds in downtown Newburgh, rattling those old historic buildings. And certainly we are in gridlock, which does not help with freight mobility. The other thing that that causes is it's harming our economy. It's harming the economy of Tillamook and Lincoln County because it's the direction to get back to I-5 if you're trying to move people and to move goods. In McMinnville in the 90s, when the economy statewide was very good, we lost three of our major manufacturers and lost over 1,000 jobs. We have also lost jobs in Newburgh, and I will tell you that of our 10 cities in Yamhill County attracting businesses and retaining businesses, particularly those that provide manufacturing jobs, is very difficult because businesses cannot get their goods out to I-5, cannot get their goods to market. So when you talk about how the economy will be spurred by constructing these projects, you also have to keep in mind of how transportation does provide the lifeline, the lifeblood to many businesses. So I think, you know, without belaboring the point, the other thing I wanted to mention was traffic safety, and there's a part of this brochure on the highway safety. We have three sites in the roughly 10 miles going from Newburgh to where the bypass would end, where it would connect to Highway 18. We have three sites that are on the top 10 of the crash sites in the state of Oregon. In fact, there was last week just yet again another head-on collision on this stretch of highway. So for all these reasons, this is a desperately needed project. You were asking Commissioner Kennemer about why you shouldn't wait. Our project is positioned quite well to take advantage of an infusion of funding. We are just now completing the draft environmental impact statement. We have gone through all of the land use actions. Our document is at Federal Highway Administration as we speak, and about mid-May, it will be published in the Federal Registry for 30 days. And after that point, we will, but probably mid-summer, we will have a record of decision. That is a milestone for our project. At that point, we can begin to purchase right-of-way. But I will tell you the money that's been allocated so far to this project in the STIP is not enough to get us very far. We have probably, based on the estimates, in the neighborhood of $40 to $50 million worth of right-of-way to purchase. And by the time we go through the design for this project and have paid out the dollars that we've already paid out on the current EIS, we'll maybe have in the neighborhood of $4 to $5 million of state money to purchase right-of-way. With prices going up not quite as fast as Clackamas County, but we did have George Fox University do a study, and our property values are rising about 8% a year. And so you can see we are quickly going to outrun the ability to afford a project like the Newburgh-Dundee Bypass. So I think time is of the essence. And yes, you could wait on House Bill 3415, but there are projects, at least in the case of my project, and it sounds like with Sunrise Corridor, that could make immediate use of dollars that would become available. As I said, we are very thankful that we are going to be in the RFP for the public-private partnership, but I don't believe that that's a panacea. I believe we are going to continue to need a significant amount of public funding, both federal, state, and local dollars to help move this project and other important projects of statewide significance forward. And I thank you very much for your time today. Thank you for the opportunity to comment. And I apologize, I found out so late last week about this hearing. We would have had a number of people here from the Newburgh and Dundee area and from Yamhill County. We had a very successful hearing with the Senate Transportation Committee. They came to Dundee on a Friday afternoon, which was interesting in and of itself. But thank you for the opportunity. I'd answer any questions.
Thank you, Leslie. And we did have Representative Nelson's bill for the bypass, so we heard quite a few of those people at that time.
Great.
Any questions?
Thank you.
Bruce Warner.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bruce Warner, the director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. I think you're going to be receiving in just a moment written testimony from me on both bills. First off, let me state it is a pleasure, and thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hunt, for bringing the bill forward that allows us to talk about projects of statewide significance, because as the title suggests, they are important to the entire state. And the thing that I think we all know is they're also very expensive compared to normal projects that we undertake. And as such, we need to do a considerable amount of development work. We need to get them ready to go. And I think the good news is, as you're hearing today from some of the folks who are interested in those projects, we are moving forward at the direction of the Commission to get the environmental and engineering work done to actually be able to prepare these projects for construction. And I think it's also important to note that we don't have estimates for the six projects that are currently on the list as construction projects as identified for projects of statewide significance, but they are significant. And the cost will be in the billions when you add them all up in terms of the needs. I did attach to both of my testimonies is a list of the six projects of statewide significance, along with a status report of where they are and what monies are committed at this time. So I just refer that to you for future information and reference. In terms of the both these bills, I think it's important to note that the stars are aligning in many ways, and I think you heard much of that from the previous speakers, but let me try to put it together as I see it. First off, one of those stars that's aligning is that we know that with the good management, with the work from the OSU bridge study, with our bid experience today, we believe there will be savings in the delivery of the stages 1 through 5 of the bridge program. By later this summer, we will actually have looked at all the bridges, and we'll understand based on the estimates what we think is what the current cost will be, and it will be less than what we originally estimated. And then I would say by the end of this calendar year, first part of the following year, we will have a number of more bridges under construction. So we'll see where the bids are actually going and have an opportunity to actually see the pattern of the bids and the bids that we're getting from our contractors. The second thing I think is very important is that by this summer, and I'll knock on wood here, we hope that Congress will, again, authorize the Surface Transportation Act for a number of more years, mainly 5 we're looking at, and there is potential if the bills are moving forward as we see them, there will be additional revenues available for the state of Oregon from that source. The other thing I think it's important, the other star that's aligning is that we are currently, as you heard, we will be, by the end of this month, seeking seeking proposals from the private sector to look at a number of projects throughout the state to take advantage of the public-private partnerships program that was authorized by the legislature in Senate Bill 772. So by the end of the summer, we hope to have proposals in hand and to understand what the private sector may be willing to bring to the table on some of these projects, and some of them do line up with the projects of statewide significant list. And then finally, I think the other star that's aligned is that these projects are, as you heard, moving forward. We're at places on these projects where we'll shortly be able to actually expend dollars, whereas we had not gotten through the environmental or land use process in these until this time. But due to the direction of the commission and myself, we've been moving these projects forward. So they are at the point where we're going to be able to start being able to take advantage of monies that are available. So first on House Bill 3414, we would love to come back to the legislature and talk about, again, ways to fund these projects. And again, obviously some of the stars that I described are going to be some of the things that we're going to be talking to you about. And what I just wanted to make sure in my testimony is that on this bill, as you just understood, I thought it was also a good opportunity for me to, again, just remind the legislature of all of the other needs that are out there that we have to deal with from a transportation standpoint for city, county, and state highways. And so I suspect when we start talking about these projects, it'll be hard to escape some of the discussion about where we are in funding in general. But again, we look forward to an opportunity to come back to the legislature and talk about that one. So that would be my testimony on 3414. If I'll move on then to 3415, again, in my discussion there, I just wanted to make it clear that probably the first part of next year we'll be able to say with some clarity and certainty about what the actual magnitude of the savings may be available as a result of the OTIA 3 bridge program, as a result of OSU and bid experience. And there are some things I'm worried about, which you also heard and other people testify in terms of steel prices, fuel prices, and others. But, you know, beginning of the first part of next year, we'll be able to give you some real definitive answers in terms of those savings. I think that the other thing I wanted to make this committee to remind them of is, as a result of the OTIA 3 program, we are bonding significant amounts of our existing revenue. So I just wanted to put on the record, again, those monies that remain after 2009 if you move forward and sell all of those bonds for both bridges and modernization. And I think, there will be various people that are interested in other projects other than the ones that you're talking about on this list of projects of statewide significance. So the summary I would have is that without the changes as suggested in this bill, I have committed to come back to the legislature and have a discussion with you about how best to utilize any of the savings, and I think we'll be talking about all the other potential revenue sources and opportunities that come along at that same time. If this bill is passed, clearly that would direct us how we ought to be looking at those savings. I think we would still talk about how to discuss use the savings and use any of the federal dollars or use any of the opportunities made available through the public-private partnerships program, but clearly this bill would define where you want it to go. And I think what you heard today is there are other projects that will be of interest when we get to the discussion. But again, clarity from the legislature is always important and helpful to us. So with that, I would stop and see if there's any questions.
Thank you.
Questions? Yes, Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bruce, in terms of other potential projects that are out there, am I correct in assuming that the commission won't add additional projects to statewide significance to the list until at least some of these are completed and moved off? Is that a fair assumption?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hutt, I think from a standpoint of construction, that's true, but as I didn't mention, there were a couple other projects that were on that list for study, right, where we were trying to move them forward to get some further information so we could determine if it was a project we wanted to move forward on. So I suspect there are other needs that the commission will want us to look at, and whether they call them a project of statewide significance or another project, again, we have to determine that when we get to the actual need of that project. But this is not the comprehensive list, I guess is what I would say, of projects of statewide significance that we're going to need in this state in the future. But these are the ones that are important to us right now and the ones the commission has directed us to move forward on to get ready to move forward to construction, if I'm being responsive to your question.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay. Nothing further. Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you very much.
Art? Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Art Slack with the Association of Oregon Counties. Here to testify on House Bill 3414 and 3415. We are wholeheartedly in support of House Bill 3414. We believe that it is high time that there was a good discussion about the options for funding the projects that have been identified of statewide significance. And certainly this is something that should be reviewed by the legislature, and you should have a voice in that discussion and making the choices as to how those projects are funded. I was happy to hear Bruce Warner mentioned that when you have this discussion during the interim, that will be hard not to talk about funding for other transportation activities such as maintenance and preservation, such as other capital needs for modernization. It will be hard not to have that, and I would encourage you to have that conversation. And also at that point, we would love to be able to talk about the needs that counties have, as well as cities that of the local needs at this point, that we really haven't had a vehicle to have that conversation with you during this session. Not only will we have a better understanding of what the federal government may do with reauthorization with the federal dollars, but we might have a better understanding, too, of the reauthorization of the federal forest safety net. As I mentioned to you earlier, right now counties are getting approximately $90 million for county general or county transportation support, and if that reauthorization of the federal forest safety net is either goes away or is significantly amended, certainly transportation needs at the local level, at the county level, are going to be a lot different than they are today. Otherwise, we're going to see some counties closing their operations entirely as a result of the loss in revenue. With regard, Mr. Chair, with regard to House Bill 3415, certainly how any savings from the OTIA 3 revenue that was created by the legislature, any savings and how that's spent is really a policy decision that the legislature should be involved in. There will be additional information available in the next year with regard to the amount of money, and with the information that you'll receive during the interim about the options of funding, how that money might be spent. I think that certainly the legislature could make the decision today as to how to spend any savings, but you might want to consider waiting just a tad until you have some additional information at this point. With that, Mr. Chair, that completes my comments at this point.
Thank you, Art. Questions?
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much. John from AOI.
Afternoon, members of the committee, Mr. Chairman. I'm John Ledger with Associated Oregon Industries, and I just have a couple of very brief remarks. First of all, I want to thank the legislature. I think they've done a great job on the transportation issues. Some of you may recall that AOI actually kind of helped get through a referral about 8 years ago that increased the gas tax, went out to referral, and I think I'd say it went down in flames, except that'd be too gentle. And it got 12% of the vote, which I figure is like background air, you know, when people don't know what they're punching. But the whole issue of transportation is very important to our members. Sometimes companies may not come in and express it to you because they will say, we don't have a fleet. But the cost that is built into their product from whoever does deliver it is reflected in their competitiveness. And so I think it affects everybody. You've heard before, it's a vital interest for economic growth. We hear a lot of concerns about being able to get freight around and the time that's involved. Certainly safety for our members. And one thing I just wanted to touch on because it hadn't been addressed before, and that is the when you want to have economic growth, maybe expand a plant or bring in a manufacturer, one of the things that you that helps you get the facility in or not faster or slower is how is what the pollutant level is in an area, what the air quality is like. And one of the best things you can do to improve air quality is to improve traffic flow. In fact, I think it's Spokane, actually part of their federal plan to come into attainment was to build a connector. They actually did highway construction to improve their air quality, and that means when you want to locate a plant in there, you're not bumping up against the standard that makes it much more difficult to build. So I think something like this, doing these projects as quickly as you prudently can, it's good for the economy, it's good for safety, it allows people to move into an area that otherwise may not. And that's really all I have, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
John. Question?
Nope. Okay. Jessica Adamson. Welcome, Jessica.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jessica Adamson. I'm here today on behalf of the Associated General Contractors. AGC's members build your highways and bridges and roads, and so we're pleased to be able to be here today to provide our perspective on these pieces of legislation. As a general rule, AGC refrains from getting involved in the fray about which projects are modernization or maintenance or preservation, because we build them all, and we like it that way. But we do believe that it is important to weigh in and to say that to the extent monies are left over, and we would caution, we are at the very early stages of this project. We're looking at another 7 or 8 years of construction. We've already seen in the last few years what can happen with commodity prices that are completely out of the hands and out of the control of the contractor. Things like steel that in the past couple of years have experienced dramatic price increases that were beyond anything that the contractors ever could have anticipated. We're watching what's happening with fuel. Cement is on the horizon. The cost for cement, you can watch that skyrocket, we believe, very soon. So all of those things together in combination with labor price increases and other market dynamics that drive the cost of construction, the numbers that we're looking at today, will they be there in 8 years? We just don't know. So we would caution this committee first that whatever number is projected to be there, to reserve with caution, because it may or may not be there at the end. We hope it is. That would be wonderful. We praise the department for doing their fiduciary responsibility to spend these dollars wisely, and we do hope there are monies left over. But in the event that there are, we do believe it is important to use those for other projects, whether they be for projects of statewide significance, whether they be for additional bridges, but whatever it is, there are so many projects that need to be constructed in the state. We are falling so far behind in maintenance and preservation. We are not keeping up with the modernization needs of the state, and certainly there are a lot of bridges that were left off of that list that could use some help and repair along the way as well. So we are here in support of the idea of using any leftover funds for additional construction, because the state needs to do so much more to invest in the infrastructure we already have. But we would also urge caution because there are a lot of forces that are at work that are out of the control of the department, out of the control of the contractors, nothing that we can anticipate sitting here today, but may on the horizon as we look back 7, 8 years from now, say, you know, We thought there'd be all this money, and look what happened. So just a bit of, hopefully not too much negativity there, just some reality, we hope. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Questions? Okay.
Thank you.
I think that's everyone that signed up. Anyone else testify on 3414 or 3415? Close the public hearing on 3414 and 3415. And open a public hearing on 3197. Patrick?
Not too far. House Bill 3197 requires ODOT to transfer upon request driver's license information of anatomical gift donors to procurement organizations, modifies the methods for revoking donor designation, and the persons authorized to make an anatomical gift on behalf of a person. It modifies the duties of hospital personnel related to anatomical gifts and requires certain persons who find a deceased person to make an inquiry of donor status. That being said, we have Dash 1 amendments before us that modify the bill a little bit. I believe Representative Berger is sitting down, and we'll probably...
Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Vicki Berger, State Representative, District 20 from the Salem area, and I will not describe this bill to you in great detail because there's plenty of folks in the room who can do a better job. I just wanted to come down and thank you for hearing this bill. I became concerned with the anatomical gift issue because of a teenage constituent to last session who came up with an inappropriate bill. It turned out to not have a didn't do what she thought it would do, but the donor folks came to me and said, you know, we have some other changes next session that we'd really like to look to, and it's one of those subjects that you don't think about until a moment of emotional crisis in the normal course of your day. And I think what this bill speaks to is our need to think of these things ahead of time and to have a system that's clear and complete and understandable and works for folks, because when anatomical gifts are needed and given, it is under conditions of extreme stress, if you think about it, for all of the folks involved. So these folks who work in this area are very aware of this and have brought this forward. They also work very proactively with me and some other agencies and the sheriffs and ODOT to try and make this work, be a very workable bill. And that's basically what the amendments are about. So along with this bill and your hearing and good attention to it, I would also recommend that each of you personally make sure that your own wishes are clearly spelled out in this arena. And thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Representative. Questions? Yeah, Representative.
I have a couple. On our staff measure summary of this bill, the last line of what measure does is require certain persons who find a deceased person to make an inquiry of donor status and notify the procurement organizations.
We're talking about emergency personnel.
Right.
Okay. And I think that there are folks here, because that was one of the issues around the sheriffs. We put some language back in that said circumstances permitting to try and make it so that they aren't, you know, mandated to go rifling through things when there are other circumstances that would mandate a different set of circumstances or a different set of actions.
Follow up too is there a plan then for some kind of educational component of this for fire departments, police, sheriffs?
I'm not aware of a specific one. Certainly the police agencies that contacted my office concerning their own concerns, there's not a huge difference between what this requires and what has been past practice. And my discussions with the sheriffs and the police agencies was they're very aware of, you know, professionally of the need to be aware of the donor designation in these, as I said, sort of emotionally charged circumstances. So I think there's better testimony out here behind us on these specifics. So But I appreciate your questions, Representative, and your attention, because these are critical questions.
Further questions? Oh, all right. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Mary Jane Hunt. Oh, that's fine. Just come on up. It just saves me. It just saves me stating a whole bunch of names.
Welcome.
Good afternoon, Chairman Gilman, members of the committee. I'm Mary Jane Hunt. I'm Executive Director of Oregon Donor Program. We appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I would like to point out with me part of Oregon Donor Program and part of the representatives of the procurement agencies that we were just speaking with are here today. On my left is Mike Seeley. Mike is Director of Pacific Northwest Transplant Bank. And also here with us is Barbara Crow, who is the Director of the Lions Eye Bank of Oregon. And also Bob Heinley, who's the Director of Community Tissue Services. Oregon Donor Program is very unique because for the past 30 years, we have provided education about the need for organ and tissue donation. And we do that in a collaborative way. We're here today in support of House Bill 3197. Basically, this bill is actually amending current law that will most significantly allow us to transfer the data that is necessary for donation from the Department of Transportation to the procurement agencies. And those are the three representatives that are here today who can specifically address your question, Representative Boone. We are here, again, in support primarily because of the need. As stated in our written testimony, out of the 87,000 people in the United States who are waiting just for organ transplants, 450 live here in Oregon, and thousands are in need of tissue. We feel that this bill will help us, especially in the future development of a registry where there will be easier access to obtain information but also identify potential donors. With that, I would like to reintroduce Mike Seeley, Pacific Northwest Transplant Bank, who can address specifically some of those issues.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to present. Along with what Mary Jane Hunt just mentioned, the provisions, there are some other essential changes that brings our Anatomical Gift Act in Oregon up to speed. In 1998, there was introduced new conditions of participation and Medicare rules that require that hospitals follow certain procedures. Our bill had lacked that because our last revision was prior to that, and so we've made those amendments or changes, which brings us up to current practice in the country. So we're in step with other states and other best practices. It also enhances the opportunity for emergency personnel, where circumstances permit, to notify agencies of someone who's deceased who maybe have a donor card or information about that. So it speaks to that a little more specifically. And clearly, the opportunity to create a registry, which is now considered a best practice in the United States. The Secretary of Health and Human Services has made it part of his initiative on organ donation, and we are able to, the language that it's added in the bill will allow for a registry to be formed over time. And that's a big step forward, and will make a big difference in the lives of others and saving lives. So I stand here today in support of this bill. So.
Thank you. And support of the Dash 1 amendments, I'm assuming.
Absolutely.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Questions? No questions.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I'm sorry if I missed this, but could you explain what the Dash 1 amendments do? They're awfully lengthy.
Sure.
Okay. Aside from a few of the editorial type things, you're adding in, if I understand this, you're adding in quite a bit of new language here under Section 6.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the section that you're referring to, I believe, is basically with the Department of Transportation. I do know they're here, and they may be able to specifically address that.
Okay, that's
if that's easier.
Happy to answer.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay.
Okay.
A couple more. So.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. Actually, if you...
Well, Barbara and Robert are not going to... Okay.
Well, they did want to repeat exactly what we're saying.
Well, if that's what they want to do, then they don't need to come up here.
They are in support as well.
Thank you.
I would be happy to help Representative Boone if he has any further questions.
Come on up.
Okay.
And state your name, please.
Yes, Barbara Crowe, Director of the Lions Eye Bank of Oregon. You had asked about the emergency personnel, and what we intend for that to be is when they are searching for an identification, if they happen to see the D on the driver's license, that their dispatch would be able to report that to us. And we have been proactively working with the sheriffs and the state troopers and the medical examiners, and they are willingly taking on this project as well and have been formulating protocols so that their people will know exactly how to proceed with this.
I have a quick question then, and this is just maybe procedure and it's common sense and all that, but I'm particularly sensitive. We had a fire call where a young man was injured quite badly, but he was still alive.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm real concerned about comments and statements made on the scene, and on dispatch. You can hear the radio dispatch, it's broadcast, and also even in the hospital, so I would hope mm-hmm. that people would use some when the obvious, if the person's dead, that's one thing, but it's if they're not. Then.
Right, absolutely. Everything is done immediately to save the life of a person. Nothing is to be communicated at all about donation until that person is dead. And what the protocol that the sheriffs have been working with is that when, for instance, a state trooper comes upon a scene death, they must report that to dispatch. So the trooper on the scene does nothing more than report to dispatch, does not contact the agencies at all. It was the dispatch that would then call the agency during their time of freedom to away from the scene entirely to just inform us that there was a death.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Any further questions?
Thank you.
You
very much.
And Robin, it's your turn. And I'm sure you have an answer for representing Burley.
Good afternoon, Chair Gilman, members of the committee. Actually, my testimony talks about the amendment, so if you want, I can just go through my testimony briefly, and I think that might answer some of the questions that have been presented. Driver's license and identification cards issued by DMV have for many years contained donor codes, and they indicate that a person's desire to be an anatomical donor. House Bill 3197 enhances the department's contribution to that program. Within the printed bill, some of the language did not work well for the department, so we did meet with the proponents of this legislation, the folks from the Oregon Donor Program and the Pacific Northwest Transplant Bank, and we worked with them and the Representative Berger, and we did actually propose several of the amendments that are before you. Several of the much of the language and the Dash 1 amendment, let me clarify that. So what these amendments do, the language that has been amended to identify what information should be transferred, we clarified that to mean name, birth date, and address, because the original bill called for all of the information on the driver's license, and one, it wasn't necessary, and two, only law enforcement has access to, for instance, photographs, so we didn't want to give them information that, one, they didn't need or shouldn't have. The bill states that the department may not charge a fee for providing the information to the procurement organization. We did ask that language be removed. We do charge for records, but we only charge the fee for the actual cost of those records. For a procurement organization to be eligible to receive personal information from DMV, such as the name, address, and the birth date, the organization has to be eligible to receive that kind of information, and that's under ORS 802-179. So as amended, we have a new section that has been added to recognize the
procurement organizations. So ORS 802.179 is the section of law that requires that where they need to be identified to have access to DMV records. So we offered that and offered that amendment. And on page 2, lines 25 through 27, we asked that the new language be amended to make it clear that the driver's license and ID card designation also means the donor understands their name will be placed on the registry. Without that, the donor's permission is missing. And that's more a point that as we read this and looked at it, we thought they might like to have that because it's clarification and it's not necessarily something we called into question with that language added. So in summary, with the Dash 1 amendments, House Bill 3197 is very workable for the department, and we would look forward to implementation of that with the bill sponsors working with them.
Thanks, Robin.
Any other questions?
Yes, Representative Burley. Another.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Robin, could you? I don't see where the language was about not charging a fee and where the amendment corrects that. I'm missing that part.
Chair Gilman, Representative Burley. In deleting lines 31 and 32 in the bill.
Thank you. Got it. Thanks. Okay, and I also now understand the voluminous text regarding Dash 1 amendment here, but the question I have, we've got a bill coming up in Information Management Technology Committee dealing with this same issue about who the department may give this information to and the resale thereof, and this is kind of touching on the same topic, isn't it? We got two bills kind of doing the same thing, perhaps?
Chair Gilman, Representative Burley, we do have a bill coming up before Representative Downs' committee, Information Management and Technology, that deals with issues of resale. And in this bill, we have specified that we do not want this organization to have the ability to resell this information. It's not necessary.
And you're specifically then by this amendment prohibiting the resale or redisclosure of the information.
Chair Gilman, Representative Burley, we've asked for that. They've agreed they don't have a reason to resell, so yes.
Thank you.
Further questions? What's going on over here on this side? It's been really quiet.
Well, you were so mean
I don't think there's any more questions. Anyone else testify on 3197? Close the public hearing and open a work session on 3197. If you're ready. Now, if you need to look at these amendments a bit longer.
Can I just ask, could somebody just read lines 28 through 31 as it would be once these amendments are incorporated in?
Page 2?
Yeah, page 2, line. Someone actually have text, because it doesn't look like these words flow together quite right, but maybe I'm...
If I may take a shot at it, I think what it says, you're talking about subparagraph B, right?
Right.
When requested by a procurement organization that has established a statewide donor registry of donors in this state, the department shall electronically transfer the name, address, birth date, and donor designation on the driver license or identification card of any person designated as a donor under this subsection, period. That's the way it would read after the amendments.
Mm-hmm. Well, on line 30, we're not adding an extra who has.
We're striking it out, right. It's being struck. Because the who has and then the whole next sentence and the better part of line 32 are all struck, and it's replaced with designated as a donor under this subsection.
Thank you.
Thank you.
LC Translation Services.
Any further comments before we accept the motion to approve the Dash 1s?
I guess I'll just ask the donor people. One thing that I'm concerned about is when you're out in a rural area, say there's a motor vehicle accident, there's a fatality, and the person is a donor, the responding agency is not allowed to remove or do anything with the body until the ME has been called and determined the person's dead. And so I'm assuming there's a time factor involved in all this. And how does that play into this? If you've looked through the ID and you see that the person's a donor.
It's okay.
Again, Barbara Crow, Director of the Lions Eye Bank of Oregon.
Yeah.
That is why the language in there is as circumstances permitting.
Okay.
There is definitely a time frame in terms of eye donation. That is the shortest time frame, but we understand that sometimes it is not possible. We do everything we possibly can to fulfill the wishes of an individual who wishes to be a donor, but there are circumstances when times do not permit.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions to Barbara? Thank you for coming up.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move we adopt the -1 amendments to House Bill 3197.
Representative Thacker moves the -1 amendments to 3197. Discussion? Objection? -1s are approved.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3197 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Thacker moves 3197 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Michael.
Aye.
Representative
Boone?
Aye.
Representative Burley?
Aye.
Representative
Hunt? Aye.
Representative Thacker?
Aye.
Chair Gilman?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you very much. Oh,
carry this.
Yeah.
Do
you want to carry it, Representative Berger?
I'd be on.
Perfect. Okay, and now I'll open a work session on 2840. If you'll recall, Patrick, maybe you want to tell us where we are a little bit.
I can give you a little information, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2840 received hearings on March 9th, April 8th, and we had it briefly scheduled but did not hear it on a week ago. Hence, the bill provides that the school speed zone limit, it would amend that. And I would say what the bill does, but of course the -2 amendments are what the committee has before them. What they do is they provide that the speed limit applies on roads adjacent to schools when flashing traffic control devices are operating, indicating children may be arriving or leaving school between 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. on a day when school is in session, or a crosswalk marked as a school zone when the flashing light control devices is operating, indicating children may be arriving or leaving school, or when children are present, as described in ORS 811-124. And the amendments set the effective date as July 1st, 2006. You'll find in the packets with the -2s also the fiscal impact analysis of the -2 amendments. I spoke to Legislative Fiscal earlier. They note that although there is an estimated cost to ODOT of 78,570 other funds, that the signage budget within the Department of Transportation can handle that, so that a referral to the Ways and Means Committee would not be necessary.
Great.
So says Legislative Fiscal Officer.
We'd like to help you spend your money. Okay, I think I'm ready for a motion. Unless if somebody wants some preliminary discussion on this, I'd be happy to entertain it. No.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt the -2 amendments to House Bill 2840.
Representative Burley moves the -2 amendments to 2840. Any discussion? Any opposition? Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we report House Bill 2840 as amended by the -2 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Burley moves House Bill 2840 to the floor as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
I'll just mention briefly, Mr. Chair. I like the amendments better than the original bill, so I will do that, but I'm going to be a no vote on this, you know that.
I understand that.
Okay.
Perfectly all right. Michael?
Representative Bloom?
Aye.
Representative Bruin?
Aye.
Representative Burley?
Aye.
Representative Hunt?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Beyer?
Aye.
Chair Gilman?
Aye.
Motion carries. Congratulations, group. We've got it out. And I'm going to carry it. I carried the last one 2 years ago. I figure I got to make up for it somehow.
No, that will be the truly defining moment.
Mr. Chair, I made a mistake. I thought we were adopting the amendment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
I
no.
Apologize.
I thought you wanted to.
Okay, I am a no on this bill. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Mr.
Chair, I move that we suspend the rules and allow Representative Thatcher to vote on House Bill 2814.
Change. Representative Hunt moves we suspend the rules and allow Representative Thatcher to change her vote on 2840. Is there any opposition?
But what's it worth to you?
I missed that. Representative Thatcher.
Votes no.
Let the record show that Representative Thatcher votes no on 2840. And that's still repassed. Okay. Anything else? Really? We are not. Well,
you know, tongue in cheek, we're saying.
I'm more optimistic. I think we're going to get through by the end of June. I do pledge. If we're still here by the middle of July, we just won't have a pace.
Yeah, well, we
can
be overnight
or
October, right?
Yeah. That's the one. You don't have anything else?
No.
It is adjourned.
All right.